thank you so much for coming. My name is Sal, and I work with mindset, mood, and movement, which is psychology, breath work, and the body. Now, it's a long story. I'm not going to tell you too much about that, but you can ask me afterwards about how I work. But essentially, I work with how we function, us wonderful human beings, how we function in our minds, in our bodies, and in our behavior. And today's thing is about hopes and fears coming out of lockdown. The reason for the session is I work with a lot of people in different spheres, but largely sort of coaching and training. And some questions keep coming up about, I'm a bit nervous. And there were some really prominent themes that have come up over the last few months about the transitions and changes, which are imminent. Some we know, some we don't. And that's what I'm going to hope to address today. So before we start, in the art of yoga and breath work and mindfulness, I'm going to ask you to come present. Nice and simple. Notice yourself upright in your body, but calm. Bring attention to the breath. So breathing through your nose softly. Breathe out slowly. Relax your shoulders if there's anything there. Breathing softly. Breathe out slowly. And do it one more time. So your mind is really present. Letting go of what you've been doing and being really fully here. Great. Okay, so some specific areas we're going to jump into. These are themes. I'm going to try and weave them in. Some I'm going to be explicit, some we're going to be weaving them into the content. But a big thing that's coming up is feeling nervous around other people. I'm going to address that. Uncertainty about where work is going, where your business is going, or you know, however that works, and how the restrictions affect that. That's another key theme that seems to be present. Returning to an office environment or returning to where you were, it's again another one. I've had many people saying, I'm really anxious about this, or I'm really not sure because of the changes. So there's another theme. And lastly, the generic one, which is wanting to get back to normal. Problem is, we can't really get back to normal because we can't go back in the past. So working through a mindset shift that can help that. So we're going to pick up on that. And there are some distinctions and changes that I really invite you to kind of take on, try them out. So swapping false hope for optimistic action is going to be one of them. And you'll see how that plays out as we go through. But, you know, false hope is, you know, it's on a whim. It's kind of quite external. We don't have any control over it. Optimistic action, something we have choice over. Shifting from the fear of what might come up to trust in your ability to deal with things. That's a massive shift. Again, a lot of the panics and problems that I see and I work with is trying to change the external, the things out of our control, rather than bring attention into the internal, and the things we can control. So this is an important distinction. Thirdly, yes, instead of wanting to get back to normal, we're going to unpack that a little bit and look at how we can accept that things have changed and this possibility. So again, it is a mindset shift. And now I'm going to explain reasons, biological and psychological, why this is tricky. And lastly, because this is all wired to how we feel, wanting to be safe. It's a natural feeling, but we want to get the right ability to be secure in how you act and what you do rather than in what's happening around us. So the world has changed. You know that. I know that. We all know that. The question is, do we accept it? And there's a different distinction. This little map here is, of course, a different color to most of them. And it sort of struck my eye thinking, yeah, you know, the world's the same in many ways. But it's got a different complexion now. And that's not easy because we've been used to things for all of our life until this point, and the world has changed. You know, the significance of this event is huge and it hasn't been fully felt yet. I think there's going to be the ramifications after it. So how we address it, the how is going to be more important than the what. And as Seneca, the great, he was a Stoic philosopher back in the day, he said the whole future lies in uncertainty. Live immediately. I love that. Okay, let's check in with this big one, feeling nervous around people. So it comes up, and of course, there's something that's personal. It could be for health reasons. It could be this because that's what you've learned to do. It could be that suddenly there's groups of people at work or social that you've got to get used to. We're going to need to deal with them. Adaptation. Now, this is something that happens to us humans. So we adapt biologically, physiologically, psychologically, socially. We are our adaption masters, and yet we may not know this. Now, anything that changes, of course, our culture has changed, our lifestyle has changed, our working formats have changed. We have changed with them. Now, I'm going to use a silly example, remembering to take a mask. And I don't know about you, but the amount of times I would leave, like 1 year ago, oh, God, I forgot my mask. And I can't go into a shop to get something because I forgot the mask. Now I never forget the mask. It's like the same old pattern, pick up the phone, pick up the keys, pick up the mask, because we've adapted. And that adaptation is a natural response. The problem we have is that we've adapted into quite a solitary, pullback lifestyle. We've adapted into a state of fear, largely mediated because of all the signals around us. And we have adapted to that, consciously or unconsciously, we've adapted. So we're being asked to adapt again into something different. And that's quite a big ask, because it takes conscious choice normally to shift. And we have what's called homeostasis. Our body has homeostasis, and I see it with psychology. We like to stay with what we know, and we'll pick up on that as we go through. So the environment shapes us. I know that that's the physical environment, the place that you work, walking down the street where there's people, sure, you know, everything. But there's also the digital environment where we hang out now, and all the media and messages that come through that, and social environment, you know, what people say, what people think. These all affect us, and they affect how we think, how we feel, and how we act. And this is the external stuff happening to us that we are adapting to. But more interestingly, when we want to change, we have an internal environment. I reference the head, but of course it's the whole system. But our psychological structure, you know, you, me, who we see ourselves as we are, our beliefs, our values, our worldview, you know, whether we believe that it's safe to go to a social environment or not, that's all inside, all of it. Now, that's the space where often we haven't checked in and done the work, because no one told us. But that's the space where I do a lot of work, and with people and myself. And this is a big one, because how we think, what we perceive, how we physically are in our body and how we act has a huge effect on change. Whereas trying to change the external, like hoping the coronavirus would go away, hoping the vaccine will work, can't control any of it. Don't know anything that's going to happen. What we do know is how we respond to it. So when we bring attention back in, then we have a lot more choices on feeling and acting a bit differently. So fear and anxiety. Now, they're not very nice. They're not meant to be. You know, fear is meant to be a really overwhelming feeling to get you to do something. And anxiety is on the pathway. And anxiety pretty much is the prediction piece of the brain or the mind. Anxiety is almost like imagination gone into security mode. So if you're getting anxious about being around people, going back to work, you know, doing something with your business, it's useful. Right up to the point, it causes you to be stuck. And then it no longer becomes useful. So anxiety is to predict a future, predict a problem, and to keep us safe. That's what it's designed for. If, and in our current world, most of our safety is psychological, i.e., you know, no one's going to run down the road and bash us over the head with a club, you know, or a big saber-toothed tiger is going to run out. We're worried about what might happen to our jobs, you know, this and that, can I go see my friends? It's a psychological safety, but the same body, brain experience happens of fear and anxiety, and it's unpleasant. The problem is that we're surrounded by this stuff. You know, I've often said there are two prevalent viruses at the moment. One is coronavirus, which we can see. Well, sorry, can't see. We can see its effects of. The other one is fear. Fear, in a way, is just as much a virus as a biological one. We need to keep a check on our own stuff with this one. So here's a little map. If you like your maps, this is quite a good one. So on the side here, we've got anxiety from low to high or low to extreme. Excuse me, and thoughts, or particularly negative thoughts, that where that mind is filling the gaps, thinking about stuff from low, nothing much going on, to lots of extreme high-end thoughts, and our little curve here going up. So if we're at the bottom, low thoughts, nothing negative, no worries about the future, the anxiety is low. Soon as that ramps up, you know, if we say, oh my God, what's going to happen at work, and what if I go back, and then I catch coronavirus, and yeah, and so on and so forth. That's what our brain or brain mind can do. It can fill the gap with fear, and then the anxiety ramps up. And if we don't able to cap it, it just carries on escalating, and catastrophizing is a word we use in psychology. Oh, this bad stuff will happen. We need to come back down that slide. So controlling the mind is a big one. Not necessarily easy, but it's one to put some attention in, because that is much more under control than is, or than our external forces. And now I'm going to come back to an exercise that's going to make this experiential shortly. So we'll come back to that. So the distinction of shifting at the fear of what might happen into your ability to deal with what comes up is a big one. It shifts it from external to internal. It shifts it from being feeling under some control and choice, from out of control and happening to you. It's a big distinction. So we all like vaccines at the moment, very popular. Here's a vaccine for you. It's an antidote. And the antidote to fear, and by the way, it's not love. And lots of people say, what's the opposite of fear? It's love. It's not. It's trust. But the real antidote is trust plus action. So trust is this implicit trust in whatever you do, you'll be able to manage and meet and change and carry on. But trust in itself isn't strong enough without taking action. Now, that could be contacting somebody. It could be doing something at work. It could be doing something in a relationship or at home or with your health. But trust and action will be the two powerful things as an antidote to fear and, of course, inaction. So I'd like you to just hold that thought. So how to develop trust? Well, trust is, firstly, it's a biological, physiological thing. So the antithesis of that could be anxiety. You know, anxiety has a shape. The human body goes into flexion when we feel threatened. So it means it folds forward. Yeah, if you ever feel or see people with their shoulders down, their head down, to quite a fear-based mode physiologically. And we know this. You know, we know this from body stuff. Psychologically, thoughts then go inwards about what ifs and all these problems. And if we can relax into that physiologically first, and then psychologically next, challenge that and go, is this really true? Is this really happening right now? We then start to release the hold that fear or anxiety might have. Now I'm going to invite you to do a little exercise. It's really simple, but really powerful. As with all things, I look into work and I deal with a lot of complexity in psychology. And I always find the more simple something is, the more powerful it is. But it is not necessarily easy, so you have to apply yourself. So here we go. You can avoid this or come along if you want to. Excuse me, let's move this little thing on the screen. So take a second and think about something that makes you a little anxious. Nothing too much. Could be a simple challenge at work, simple challenge at home, nothing too much, just to get a bit of a feel for it so we can work it through. And notice what emotions are coming up. So that's the first thing. So noticing the emotional realm. Now, if I think about maybe giving this talk, for instance, I might be thinking, oh, I'm feeling a little apprehensive. I want to make sure it goes well and I can deliver some really good content. And I'm a bit nervous. So that's the emotional structure. So take a second, make a note or a mental note. What are the emotions coming up on your example? And then notice what level of thoughts or what type of thoughts. So thoughts could be, I'm no good. I can't deal with this. I'm really worried. What if that happens? Map the thoughts. So we've got an idea of the thinking structure. Emotions and thoughts are different, by the way. So knowing like what you feel and then what you think is really important. And then check where in your body you can feel something. So if you're feeling a little anxious about your situation you're imagining, and yeah, you think a bit, oh, you've got your emotions, you understand what the thoughts are, what's your body do? So for me, often it's here or it's belly. I start to get some tightness. Notice what happens in your body. And even if it's small amounts, you're mapping it. Like, okay, that's happening. And then lastly, how are you breathing? Take a moment, notice how you're breathing. So when we have a map of what we do, the mind-body system does when we meet anxious situations or difficult situations, then we want to be able to have some response. And it goes like this. This is the trust building model. We're going to start by breathing a particular way. So I'm going to invite you to join me in this. Start by breathing through your nose, softly, gently, but through your nose, in and out. If you're not sure that you're breathing to your diaphragm, you can rest your hands here. You'll see from the image that I'm breathing into my side ribs. It's not forced, it's calm. We want to get that breath low. We want to be able to change it from a chest breath to a low belly breath. So we downregulate stress. We want to tell the inner system that we're safe. The breath is the most powerful mediator of change in the system. So we start here. And it's around 90 seconds. Some of the research suggests that that's enough time. 90 seconds. All it is to change the neurological processes within from being in a stress response to being in more of a relaxation response. So we can downregulate the more anxious scenario and the more anxious feeling. So keep that breath flowing through the nose to the belly. It will keep working. And start to notice where you might have been tense or stuck. So if you're a shoulder holder, I call it, let them soften. If you grip your jaw, relax them. If you find yourself overly flexed forward or a bit tight in the belly, you're twitching. Yeah, what do? We all have a neurological and physiological map. You'll know yours. The better you spend time with it, you'll know it. And you can think, oh, okay, I'm twitching. Just going to soften. And when that's taken care of, keep with the breath, by the way. I'd like you to remind yourself that you've overcome challenges before. You would not be here today if you haven't overcome something. I guarantee it. You've overcome many challenges, from personal to work to relationship to health. There's loads of things you've overcome, which implicitly means if you've overcome something before, you can do it again. So when we hook into that knowledge base, it's like an anchor. And like a ship anchors in a storm, it anchors in something really stable. So you're not swayed by thoughts that are racing. You're like, yeah, this is tough, but I've overcome stuff before. And then you can start to feel your emotions changing. So peaky emotions, fear emotions, anxious emotions, there's a place for them. But if you want to make change, you need to get control of them. And it's something I find a lot, that if we're not in control of our breath and our body and our mind, it's really tough to deal with the pandemic. It's really tough to deal with work changes, to deal with parental changes, you know, lifestyle changes, because you're literally at sea, like a boat on a waves all over the place. You need to drop the anchor inwards. And when you do, a lot of change happens. Very nice. So the next piece that seems to have come up is uncertainty about work and business. Now, if you have a job or don't have a job or have business, you know, all of these things are going to relate to you something different. But this area and this arena is really big, and it's going to touch you, me, everybody, you know. And it could be that you have the most successful business in the world right now, and yet your supply is going to go down, you know. So there's a lot of changes coming up. So this is a mindset shift, and I think you'll like it. So I work with this quite a lot at the moment. It's been present ever since pandemic. I've been coaching people and doing some training on this, and I call it micro macro thinking. And it's about working with the facts in the present plus the big picture. Now you see I've used a puzzle picture. And of course, if you've ever had the the joy of doing a puzzle, well, you need the box, right? You need the big box with the picture of the scene. That's the big picture. We know what we're making. We need the big picture. But then we got to get all the little jigsaw pieces out, and we need to start figuring out, okay, that goes with that, that goes with that. And it's micro. And it's very powerful, this micro-macro model or this micro-macro mindset, because a lot of the time, the middle mindset, middle ground thinking, really tricky. If you're trying to plan middle ground, and I work with businesses at the moment that are planning for September and into next year, what they're going to do, they can't plan because there's too much uncertainty. So what we've had to do is focus on what you can control now and versus what is the big picture. Like, where are you taking your business? Where are you taking your work? What are you doing in your job? And this could be a health thing as well. You know, where are you taking your health? You know, where do you want to be in 10 years' time? Big picture, micro, very powerful. The middle ground is often operated in uncertainty and ambiguity, and particularly in a pandemic scenario like now, where there's so much fluidity, it seems the smart mind is on this model of thinking. Now, of course, I can't guarantee that, but I've seen a lot of people work with this right now, and it seems to be a really applicable, like the right approach to take for many of us. So take a second and think about one of your challenges you've got and think, what are the micro people? What are the small things I can do with? It could be marketing, it could be business, it could be in your job that you do certain things. but what's the big picture? And have your own jigsaw puzzle. Enjoy it, you know, because you can't work out the middle bit if you can't get the small bits together. And that's the distinction with this. So it's a really powerful mindset shift. And this is another thing that seems to be coming up with a lot of people I've been speaking with about returning to an office scenario and not remote working. It could be the office thing. Commuting is a big one. I've got a client who commutes to London, and she's got so used to being back and with the children, she's really struggling with this one to adapt back into this. So micro macro thinking could be the most appropriate approach to bring yourself back into this. And I worked with a client, another client recently, and they were concerned about getting back into a busy office space, and they wanted the remote working because it worked for them. So we did the same approach. What are the micro steps you can take in your travel, in your work, in your approach? What's the big picture? How do you want your day to be? How do you want to feel? And it was very personal, but then they could apply it in the space of the work context. And this could be the same as going to, a gym, going to a group. It's the same thing, Often the context is different, but the underlying themes are the same. And you're hopefully seeing that. And the distinction of swapping false hope for optimistic action, I think, is really powerful. Just to note, those of you who've done work with me, I'm not overly into the positive psychology approach myself. It works for some people. What I find is truism and realism is really powerful. It's like when you truly see with clear filters, you can deal with something. If we try and put a positive spin on everything, I'm not sure that's as helpful for most of us. It doesn't work for me and my model of working. So we want to swap false hope, like, oh, it'll be okay. And it's like, it'll probably be okay, but it may not be just what you want. But optimistic action implicitly says you're going to be able to do something. So that's empowering. Optimistic means, well, we'll find something that's useful or something that's good, or we'll find a way. And that approach seems to be, certainly these times, maybe a better way to go. And I want to bring this to normality. What is normal? You might be thinking, oh yeah, God, can't wait to get back to normal. Yeah, 21st of June and all this sort of stuff. It's big. And it's really ubiquitous. It's out there. So what's normal for you? But I'm talking about getting, instead of that desire to get back to normal that we might think, it's like, can you accept that things have changed? But can you find new opportunities? Can you shift and change and adapt accordingly? Now, those of you like psychology, there's loads of biases. We have loads of thinking biases that shape us and shape our worldview. And this is a big one that I'm seeing prevalent at the moment, which is status quo bias. And by the way, it's not the rock group from the 80s or whatever they were out. It's a status quo bias. It's about being stuck. I know I'd rather stay here than go there. I'd rather stay with what I know, even if it's rubbish, than go to what I don't know. It's a human quirk. Unfortunately, we all have this. So it takes a conscious person to say, well, firstly, we need to know it, because when we see it, then suddenly it has less magical grip on us. We can start to go, okay, I feel like that thing's happening, the status quo thing. And we can start to check, is this really what I want? And it's a really powerful question. And when I hear people saying, I want to get back to normal, I don't think that's correct, personally. And I think it's what we might mean is, I want to get back to what is familiar. I don't know if that resonates with you, but getting back to what's familiar, which then begs the question, well, why? Why do we want to get back to what's familiar? Well, we know we have status quo bias. So there's one big sort of flag we can put up. Okay, so this is pretty much how humans function. We know that we like status quo bias and that it's a more of an effort to shift, but the status quo may not be appropriate. So when we say, well, actually for me being familiar actually means what is known. And what being in the unknown space is an uncomfortable human mindset. If we don't know what's going to happen, we feel fearful. We all do. It's a normal response. We'd rather know something than be, not knowing and waiting or worrying. So if it's familiar, what it does, it serves the need to know. And then that is also familiar, is easy to make sense of. So if I've always worked in London and I do a 50-hour week and I do this and that, and suddenly I'm working from home and remote and you know, I want to go back to what I know. I've been doing it for years. Because it's easy to make sense of. I don't have to overthink and work. And the way our beautiful brain is wired, it's the most energy hungry part of the body. And we have habit structures in the brain. That's why we do things through habitual patterns. So from a biological point of view, this is a natural thing. So it takes a bit of effort to change. Things are predictable when they're familiar. Now, what do we say about the prediction machine of the mind? Anxiety is the prediction machine. It's when we're trying to map the future, trying to work it out. If it is predictable, then, oh, thank God, I feel safe. I feel comfortable. And safety is the core drive of a human system. And we're designed to survive first and foremost. Everything else comes secondary. It's a prime system. Whether we believe it or not, it's how we is. And same with our identities. And this is, I think, a really significant thing, which I have the privilege of working with people, that not just we physically need to survive as a human or as a species, but psychologically, you know, the identity of I wants to survive. You know, I was, let's say I was running a restaurant. I want to keep going, but maybe the restaurant business is gone, you know, and really tough. And I've worked with lots of people who've had to let go of solid careers and businesses and transition. But what we really had to let go of is their identity. And that's a big thing, because that is more psychological than real. And we can shift it. But all these triggers come up. So this is really applicable. So let's redefine normal. Let's redefine it. Because if you want something, you need to know what it is. Golden rule of coaching. If someone says to me, oh, I really want to have this experience. I'm like, okay, so what exactly is that like? What exactly do you want? Not sure. Well, we need to know. So if you want to have a feeling of normality, of some kind of normality, then it needs redefining. And what you and I call normal was once brand new, was not known and not experienced. And it's important to remember that. So Picasso, a lovely one here, he said, I'm always doing things I can't do. That's how I get to do them. And I love that. So what can you normalize? And this is important, because we do need some groundedness. We need stability. We can't be all over the place. We need to anchor somewhere. So remember, like that ship in the sea, we need to anchor into some normality, but we want to be choosy about it. So becoming comfortable with change, that is a choice. And it's becoming comfortable with the body, like the process we did, becoming comfortable with thinking in perhaps a different way, and becoming comfortable with things are going to change, and that's okay. Trusting your abilities. You know, you would not be here today if you've not overcome many things. You know, no one gets through life unscathed and without challenges. So you have abilities. So it's a case of kind of looking in at the inner toolbox and going, yeah, I've dealt with tricky stuff before. I know I can do this. Self-control through breath work. I'm a breath work teacher as well. And the more I work with psychology, the more I add breath work in, because if you can change and control your body through breath work, which is fundamentally and scientifically proven, whoo, happy days. We are in a much more robust, clear state. And the body and the mind are an ecosystem. One doesn't function well without the other working well. And finally, looking for possibilities. You know, there's a saying I used to use with myself, myself initially when I was going through difficult times, was all problems are possibilities yet to be unpacked. And I think there's something true about that. Without overfluffing it and making it positive and happy, you know, problems are problems. They're not nice. That's the deal. But maybe there's something we can learn from it. Maybe there's a possibility. Maybe we learn that we just need to change and there's new good things on the horizon. So I implore you to think about that. So instead of getting back to normal, can you choose to accept things, opportunities and change with courage? That's a great distinction. So I have a little offer for you. So I do coaching work and training work and body work as well. But for this space, I do a mindset diagnostic. So I talk with people and we kind of figure out what's going on for you. What's your map and where are you stuck and where are you flowing? Where, you know, what's going on for you? I've got four spaces. So it's a first come, first serve. They're in May. You're welcome to come along and spend some time with me virtually. It's normally the safest way to do it. And we can have a little check-in with, like, you know, how are you doing thinking? Perhaps what's stimulated off the talk? Is there a challenge, you know, and how can we do that? And I normally try and set people with like one really key thing to kind of go away. So if you want to, we can speak after, drop a note in the comments. But there's only four spaces and they will go quickly. And finally, to say thank you for coming, because you have just planted a tree today. Well, I'm planting a tree because you came, but we planted a tree. So I joined Ecology, or Ecology, not sure how they pronounce it. Awesome business. I do promote them. They are a climate positive initiative organization, and they are doing loads of stuff around climate management, climate action. And the thing that I do with them is I plant trees. For everyone who does business for me, we plant trees on a sliding scale, depending on what the expenditure is. So for showing up today, no cost to you. I'm planting a tree because you came here, and it's part of what I do. You can ask me more about my climate positive initiative process that I do with my own work and my own actions. But it's a really important thing. So thank you for coming. And remember, to feel safe, we need to learn to be secure in our actions. That is a powerful place to come from.